Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant's ships. She bringeth her food from afar. God designed his tabernacle while they were wandering in the wilderness, and his temple when they settled in Jerusalem. And in the New Testament, Jesus Christ designed the New Testament church, an assembly in a local area like we are here, and gave the architecture of that house. But all through the ages, people have had better ideas, in quotes, than what God had, and said, well, we'll do something better than the tabernacle, or we'll do something better than the temple, or we'll do something better than the local church. And they've made up evangelistic associations and all sorts of corporations and things like that to represent the God and say, we're going to get all this church stuff out of the way, and we're going to do it a new way. Those are high places. And the men here were singing about, they might have been higher elevation than the temple, but they weren't what God wanted. Because he had specific instructions and specific plans for his house. Well, we're continuing our study on the Christian home today, and I wanted to mention a few things. Remember, it's the Christian home, and at the very beginning we said this subject would be dealing with the ideal, and God puts the ideal in front of us, doesn't he? He doesn't say, I'm going to teach you how to be a 75% good person. He teaches us how to be perfect. In fact, he commands us to be perfect, knowing that as a sinners we aren't going to be perfect, but it's just not his nature to hold something in front of us that is subpar. And so when he defines the Christian home, the definition is an ideal definition. The Christian husband is the ideal man for a Christian wife. And the Christian wife is an ideal woman for the Christian husband. And the Christian husband and the Christian wife together as a team are ideal parents for the child. And the child honoring and obeying the mother and father and being instructed at an early age about the Lord Jesus Christ and trusting in the Lord at an early age and following the Lord at an early age will be an ideal child to grow up and then take his or her place as a Christian parent in the next generation. That was God's engineering. That was God's plan, and that was God's design. We also said that to even approach the subject of the Christian home, we invoked that old passage in the book of Proverbs that said, where there's no vision, the people perish. You got to know why he had the Christian home. Why did he design it in the first place? I mean, it's fun to have a wife. It's fun to have babies. But that's not... You know, lots of kids, they want to be with a person of the opposite sex, as they say today, be with them. And if they have babies, that's good too. I always liked babies. Well, no, he had a reason for designing the home and for defining the Christian home in ideal terms. And we looked at that from the book of Genesis, where it was to be have dominion over the things that God created. He even chose Adam to name the animals, not to mention herding them in corrals. And he taught them how to tend the garden and plant things and harvest things and make bread out of the wheat that you harvest and things like that. So that was one of the reasons to have a husband and a wife who would have children, so that since he made the earth to be inhabited, as it says in the book of Isaiah, it's going to be inhabited by human beings who are going to continue to have dominion over the earth. Don't you love the Golden Gate Bridge? Have you ever been across the Brooklyn Bridge? Or the George Washington Bridge in North Manhattan? You can get from one borough to the other in New York because man has taken the responsibility that God gave him to deal with the elements that he created and the living things that He created. And so that's one of the reasons He wanted to have a husband, a man, to leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, and the two to become one flesh. And when the two become one flesh, pretty soon you got children, and you're fruitful and multiplying like God said. But then we looked into the Revelation in the last book of the Bible, and the last chapter of that book, or very late in that book, and we found that other great purpose for the Christian home. And if you don't have this vision, you're not going to be able to have a really good Christian home. And this vision from the book of Revelation says this, that at the end of time, when the temporary things are over, and that one of those temporary things is marriage, there's not going to be marriage in heaven, but when the temporary things are over, then all the people of the world are going to be gathered together, and those who are saved are going to go into heaven. And it says then, in that day, when there's no more sea, and the elements have melted with a fervent heat, and the new heaven and the new earth has come down, it says that God is going to make His tabernacle with men, the saved men of the world. Where are the saved men going to come from? Men leaving their father and mother, cleaving to their wife, ideally Christian men leaving their father and mother, not being unequally yoked, but equally yoked with a saved woman, and the two become one flesh, and they raise up and train up their children in the way that they should go, and they get saved, and they're going to inhabit heaven with people that have been saved using this marvelous plan that God has of a man leaving his father and mother and cleaving to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. And now we got the vision. It's not just because it feels good to get married. It's not just because everybody's doing it. It's not just because it's fun. We have a great purpose. It's a divine purpose. And there's a reason that when we studied children in the second session, we learned that a mother and a father should train up their children in the way that they should go and should be diligent and vigilant. They don't want to spare the rod. They want to have discipline in the home. When they sit down, they want to talk to their children about the Lord. And when they stand up, they want to talk to the children about the Lord, like it says in the book of Deuteronomy. And we looked at that ideal Christian home in the 128th Psalm, and we saw it likened to a man sitting at a table with his family, his wife being like a fruitful vine growing up beside him as a partner and a co-laborer and a buddy and a lover and all that a wife is. And we saw the little children as olive plants with a view that they will one day be olive trees and be fruitful and fragrant and fresh. And we thought we saw love just bathing that home full of children. And we reflected back on how Jesus called the little children to come on to Him, and what a curse He put on those that would offend the little children. And He told us that the angels in heaven are observing these little children. They have their own angels. And He cares for them. And we saw a pattern in the Scriptures that God is a God of the fatherless because He cares about these little children. And we learned that a father and mother must bring up their children with discipline and with observation and with concern. And then we moved last week to talk about the husband and the wife, and we looked at their specific responsibilities that a wife should submit to her husband. We said this is because God designed the male and the female enough differently so that the mother bears the great brunt of the discomfort in childbearing and of being slowed down enormously, especially late in the pregnancy and in the nursing part of the raising of the children and all of these things. And that the commandment in, starting with the 22nd verse of the 5th chapter of Ephesians, the commandment for a woman to submit, a wife to submit to her husband, we said was a gift. That's why God chose to use that first. He tells the wife how to be before He tells the husband how to be in the book of Ephesians. The wife willingly and gladly honoring her husband and loving her husband and cherishing her husband, lets him be the head of the family. And so the husband doesn't say, I got the little lady under my thumb. Not only did he take this woman from Adam's side, and not only is the woman depicted as a vine on the side next to Adam, but he tells the husband to love your wife in such a way that she is a full partner with you. And the two of you together make a dynamic duo. I said not like Batman and Robin. They were a dynamic duo. A true Christian couple doing and being what they ought to be, or a dynamic duo. It's a wonderful place to raise children and to teach the children the qualities that an olive plant as a young child needs to have to be an olive tree. And in those sessions we talked about things like responsibility. Teach the child responsibility. Teach him honesty. I was talking to one of the young men that's in the congregation this morning. And I said, he looked me in the eye and said, I asked him how he's doing. And he looked me in the eye and said, how are you doing? And I said, you're 1 in 100. I gave him a hug. Teach the young people to communicate with respect to the older people, remembering back in the 40s and 50s, it was a common saying that children are to be seen and not heard. Do you remember hearing that? They're not to be showing out. They're not to be clowns. They're not to be going around destroying the furniture and things like that. We gave some examples of that. But this takes diligent parents who themselves are kind and gracious and love each other. And that picture in the 128th Psalm of a cottage, it doesn't say anything about if it had 8 bedrooms and 4 baths, or if it's a one-room cottage, it doesn't matter. A home is where daddy and mommy love each other, and where the kids feel loved and feel comfortable, and where daddy's been concerned enough to make a home like the sparrow does and like the swallow does, a nest where they can lay their young, safe and clean and wholesome. And we looked at all that. Well, today we're going to just change gears a little bit, because this is one of the strange things that you learn in life after you've lived a long time. You realize after a while that the problem isn't so much information. I would say that most who have been on these sermons, and most who even heard this review today, could tell you the purpose. Not only to have dominion over the earth, but to prepare people for that place where God is going to be their God and we're going to be His people, and the house in that last and the new heaven and the new earth is going to be a place where God is going to demonstrate His love and His mercy and His grace for eternity. You'd answer that test and probably get an A on it, you know? Maybe if somebody get an A plus, you might put one of my illustrations down there. That would give them an A plus with me if you remembered my illustration. But then also the responsibilities of the husband and the wife. You know those things. So we've considered the vision, the Bible snapshot in Psalm 128, the children and God's love and provision for them in the Christian home, especially the commandments to the parents for their well-being, and the husband and wife with their special gifts and strengths, and God's commandment to them for the benefit of the family and the kingdom of God. There's enough information in these first 3 sermons to satisfy the mind, and yet we have a lot of unhappy families in the kingdom of God. Even among those who know the teachings of, for example, Ecclesiastes 12:13 and 1 Corinthians 10:31. Let me read these, because this would be the wrapping paper of the present of all these commandments about children and husbands and wives. You might wrap it, and the message on the wrapping of these great things would be something like from Ecclesiastes 12:13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Solomon has spent a dozen chapters talking about the frustrations and the vanity in this world. It's not a friendly world in many ways. There's thorns and thistles and problems, and there's vanity and vexation of spirit. But he says, now that I've told you all about those things, let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. You could know that. You could see these great principles wrapped in that wrapping paper. Or 1 Corinthians 10:31. Whether therefore you eat or drink, or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. I remember that great scene in Chariots of Fire where the old patriarch of this Christian family, Eric Little, was an Olympic runner, and he broke the record in the 400 meters in the 1926, was it 26 or 24? Might have been 24. I believe it was 1924 Olympics. He broke the record. And the patriarch said this. Basically, he said, son, even if you peel a spud, that's what they call it in Europe, a potato. Even if you peel a potato, you can peel a potato to the glory of God. He said. So it says here, whether you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Say you know those verses and you know all these other things. Here's the sad truth. There's still some very unhappy families in the kingdom of God. I know. I've been around. I've talked to other pastors. I've seen it through the history of this church. And I'll make a disclaimer right now. It doesn't mean everybody messed up. It's very possible there was a man doing 90%+ pressing towards perfection. And the family fell apart. Or the mother might have done that. Or the mother and the father might have done all just about that could be done as parents. And one of the kids just went off the rails. I know that because the converse is true, because we have some folks in this congregation that were abandoned by your father, or abandoned by your mother when you were growing up. They were looking for fun. They weren't looking for the responsibility of the Christian home. And yet you got saved and you made it. And then you are now serving the Lord. And that's good. So it's not a simple formula. You just go in and plug it in. But I do want to ask this question. And I'll pause a little bit after I ask it for you just to think about it a little bit. How could it be that people would know what they ought to do and wish things were good and still have markedly unhappy, unfruitful, and unprofitable home? How could that be? That's what I want to emphasize in the minutes remaining this morning, because I think it's at the essence of things. Brother Rich talked about wisdom today, and it isn't just knowing what you ought to do. There's something more than knowing what you ought to do. You might get an A+ on the test and fail as a husband and fail as a wife or fail as a child. And I want to read a passage to you in the book of 1 John. And I want you to think now about the words that I titled this message, used to title the message, Heart and Energy. Heart and Energy. Let me read in 1 John 3:16 to 19. And as we're reading, remember what Jesus said to the husband. Husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church and gave Himself for it. Jesus is the example for the husband. Let me read now in 1 John 3:16 to 19. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because He laid down His life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwells the love of God in him? There's an implication here. The guy can do something for his brother. And not only that, the guy has been touched with the responsibility to be compassionate, but he shuts up his bowels of compassion and doesn't do anything for him. Many's the husband that has the assets, the personality, to be a good husband. But he isn't. Read on with the verse. My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. And hereby we know that we are of the truth. That's a heart issue. It's a heart issue. We know we're of the truth, he says, and shall assure our hearts before him. We know we love God. And one of the ways that we know we love God is because if you see the need, you need to do the deed. If you see the need, you need to do the deed. And that's what it says. Don't love in word only. So if there's a need, you have to do the deed, but the deed takes energy, and I believe that's one of the places where the rub is. I think what we really say a lot of times to our wives, husbands, is, I love you, honey, I really love you, but not that much. Not that much. Not to where I'm going to have to sacrifice and cut down the tree that's obstructing your view from the place where you wash the dishes and you've always wished it would come down. It'd be fairly simple to do. But I don't love you that much. And so there's not the energy there. And I submit to you that now we're starting to see how it could be that a person could answer all the questions and get an A-plus on the Christian home test and still have a wife that is both unhappy, underloved, unfulfilled in many ways, because not only is it going out to eat and not only is it cutting down the tree, but it takes a heart issue. And that's why in 1 John it says here, once you are into looking for the need with the right heart, you're going to do the deed because your motive in the heart is right for looking for the need. Is that easy to understand? To be the husband you ought to be, or for that matter, to be the wife that you ought to be, takes the diligence of heart to find out what is best for your wife or your husband, for your children, what is best, and to be tuned in. I've always been impressed with people that know what to buy for a present. You know, some people, they give you a Christmas present. And I'll confess guilt here. I'm not very good at buying presents, and it's probably because my heart isn't quite properly in tune to that particular subject. It should be. But some people, their radar is up from the beginning. Starting on December 26th, their radar is up and they're seeing needs because they're looking for need, because not only to buy a present, but just what you'd like to have done. What you'd like to have done. I remember your husband, Steve Grage. Remember when he was our house guest? The slightest hint put me to shame, but I'm glad he came, because now we have shelves in our pantry. The pantry's a mess, Ann said. It wasn't very long and we had shelves in the pantry. See what I mean? You have to have a heart for the other person's needs. You have to know what they really can use. Not just what they want, but what's best for them. And the same thing with raising children. If you're going to raise children to be responsible, honest, energetic, and finish the job and respectful and look a man in the eye when he says, "How are you doing?" Why, you know, almost fall over when somebody does that. When a young guy, 12 years old, comes up and says, "How are you doing, sir?" "I'm doing good." There was a cartoon many years ago. You've heard this before, but I was in the insurance selling business, and there was a cartoon of a man that was knocking on a door, cold calling, and he went to the door, and the person opened the door, and he said, "I'm selling insurance." And she says, "I am so glad you came. My husband and I said we need some. Come on in. We're going to buy some." And he's fallen over in a dead faint in the bushes. Because nobody ever does that. Well, you find a young person that looks you in the eyes and says, "How are you doing?" You might just fall over in a dead faint. That shouldn't be. If we train up a child in the way he should go, we watch the way they react with other people. And if they just blow you off when you say hi to them and they keep on going, there's a time now for a lesson. Well, why doesn't the lesson come to pass? Our heart isn't there to observe the situation, and then it's a hassle. It is a hassle. It takes energy to do the deed. We're not suggesting that women should be demanding to the place where the man doesn't know whether to go turn right or to the left. But do you see the difference of having a heart that wants to know what the wife likes? I read another article where the Bible says that the wife should submit themselves to the husband and be an encouragement to the husband, and the husband trying to do some nice things. As a couple came home one night and he said to the wife, "Honey, after we eat tonight, let's go for a bike ride together like we used to do when we were dating. Let's get on our bikes and go for a bike ride." And the wife said, "Well, a bike ride, but, and then he was just shot down in flames. And then she, reflecting back, said, "How much better if I would have said, 'Yeah, that sounds neat.'" You say, "Well, that wouldn't be sincere." What do you mean? We're not listening to WIIFM, "What's in it for me?" The real pleasure is in pleasing another person and doing things that would benefit them. And in that regard, let me say this about whether you talk about a husband loving his wife or a wife loving the husband, or parents watching over the children to determine what needs to be improved and where the rod needs to be applied and where instruction needs to be implied and where the daddy needs to run alongside the boy to show him how to do this or that or whatever the case may be. Whatever we're talking about there, when we talk about the husband, let's just pick the husband again for a minute. For a husband to have energy and heart, the heart to do what's right and the energy to do what needs to be done, he ought to look at the worst case scenario right out of the chute. If I asked you what are the three biggest reasons statistically and from many polls and from many marriage counselors and from many pastors, and from many other sources of data, what are the three biggest reasons that marriages fail? Well, we better address that. And the three biggest reasons are, not necessarily in this order, communication, finances, and sex. Well, husbands, you better address the worst case scenario. What are the main reasons businesses go under? I got to ask Stephen. He'd probably tell me. I'm not sure I know, but I'll bet you. I bet you've made provisions so that doesn't happen. I think capital's probably one of the biggest reasons. You just run out of money. You got to have some plan. Well, husbands, we ought to have some plan. Wives, we ought to have some plans with these same three things in mind. Well, what does that involve? That involves, in the realm of communication, I know it was about 8 or 10 years ago, a poll amongst women said the biggest complaint they had was communication. They had no sense that the husband was a friend or sensitive about the needs of the family or where things were going. I've heard of husbands that won't tell their wife how much money they make, won't let their wife know how much money they have, and won't talk to their wife at all about future plans, including what happens if I die, what happens if the husband dies. No communication. I've seen cases where the husband hid money. The wife was not even interested in spending money for herself. Just knowing, like the sparrow who builds a nest, where to lay their young and how good it would be for their young if they knew the situation. So when we're talking about heart and energy, have the heart to realize that a woman needs to know. If you're the head of the house, what's the plan? What's the plan? And a good wife with the right spirit, look at what it says there in Proverbs 31 that we read before the service. Her husband trusts in her. You can bring her in on it. Furthermore, a woman needs to stretch her wings. She doesn't just shuffle around. She needs to jog and run and sprint and do great things. Read about the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31. I heard this analogy a long time ago. If you've got a pet bird, you can keep it as a pet by holding it in your hand all the time. But you don't know if you really got a pet bird or not. Let the pet bird fly. We had a pet bluebird for a while. We called him BJ. And until he got ready to mate, he was our friend. And we were glad when he was no longer our friend because he needed to be fruitful and multiply too. But a husband that keeps his wife throttled, schedules her, won't let her go out and do the things that the woman in Proverbs 31... It says in Proverbs 31, her hands see the poor and give to the poor. And her hand, in that typical double the thing for more emphasis, and her hand reaches out to the needy. It's redundant, but he had a wife that was looking for ways to bless other people, and he let her go! And then in the 23rd chapter of that thing, it says that he is known in the gates when he's with the elders of the city. Everybody calls him. Let's say his wife's name was Genevieve. They say, that's Genevieve's wife. Hey, that's Genevieve's wife. You know, she makes the best cloth in the town. You know, she goes and helps the homeless under the bridge. You know, she helps out at the food bank. She helps out over at the hospital. He helps out with Meals on Wheels. What does that take? It takes the heart to allow the woman in the family to grow and to blossom and to use her gifts in such a way. And this is a communicated thing. And the wife realizes, I'm not on a short leash. My husband doesn't have me on a short leash. He trusts me so much. There's no leash. Honey, take the car. And in the realm of communication, this is my advice. Husbands, let your wife know where you are. Don't strain credulity. It's not credible. If you go to work usually at 6 in the morning and get home at 4:30, you can't come home at 1 a.m. and she hasn't heard from you since 6:30 in the morning. She's worried sick. You went off a bridge somewhere. And you come home at 1:30 and says, where were you, honey? None of your business. It was my business, not your business, and I don't like you asking me where I was. This is not a heart thing, a good-hearted thing. Let her know. Let her know where you are. Let her know why you're where you are. It's also a wise thing for a man to do, because there's women out there looking for men like your husband and looking for men like you. And you'd be a whole lot better if you have a habit of being accountable to your wife and you both trust each other, but don't require that she verify. Give her the information that any woman would want to know, right? So you got an A on the test and you flunk being a Christian husband in a Christian home. So you see this pattern here. 1 John says, have the heart to see the need. Same thing in your kids. The kid needs to be responsible. He starts feigning sickness to get out of school or taking out the trash or helping daddy with the garden, or he's doing that all the time. He's always sick. When it's time to do something he doesn't want to do, it takes no heart to enable him to continue on. It takes no energy to enable him to continue on, and he'll do that till he's an old man. You need to have the heart to see it, right? You need the heart to see it, and then the energy to confront it and to deal with it and say, look, just an hour ago you were out climbing in a tree and throwing rocks into the creek. You can go and do this thing. Now go over and help Miss Evans with her yard. She's expecting you and she's willing to pay you. Now go over there and don't leave until you finish the job. You hear that? But Daddy, I just now started to get a runny nose. Do it with a runny nose. That takes energy, and that's where you get an A on the test. And that's why we have Christian homes in disarray. There's not enough mental, heartfelt concern for what needs to be done, and then enough energy to confront, to deal with the situation. Let it alone and it'll get better by itself. That doesn't happen with little children. It doesn't happen with the wife usually. Have that kind of a spirit and that kind of a heart, and you'll find that, wow, wait a minute, this Christian home thing, it really works. We talked about finances. Get the wife involved in the finances. In my case, my wife is a much better bookkeeper than I am. But she cares about me, and she will say to me, we've got so much in the checking account and so much in the savings account. I say, is that enough? You say, what kind of a leader are you? Probably good enough to know who's best at what they're doing. Right? Wouldn't you say that? I read another one. Oh, this is great. The wife loved gardening, but she was a lousy cook. She didn't like to cook. She just didn't like to cook, and what she had was usually a disaster. The husband loved to cook. They had a hug-your-neck moment. Honey, you bring the vegetables in from the garden, I'll cook them. And it was great. That's what a partnership is. This virtuous woman was going out buying property. Look, your wife can find property worth $100,000 and buy it for $32,000. Give her a green light and give her the $32,000 in her hip pocket so she can go buy another one. Because this is going to work. And you got a team. But it takes a heart and it takes the right spirit. And then we talk about sex. I'll read in 1 Corinthians 7. And I'm just going to read this without too much comment, because it's quite explanatory. I really wanted to read this in the New King James and thought I had it in my notes. Well, here we go. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. God knew that we had interests in this arena, and He designed the family to deal with those interests and with those drives. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. Sir, you need to meet your wife's needs. Ma'am, you need to meet your husband's needs. And it's a pretty picture. Now, it takes a heart to know those needs, and it takes some effort and some energy to meet those needs in a way that is pleasing, kind, tender, gentle, intimate, exciting, whatever the case may be. It goes on. The wife hath not power over her body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power over his body, but the wife. You like man? I'm man. Honey, you like woman? I'm woman. Well, we don't need to say much more, do we? Really? Surely you can read between the lines. There are marriages that have broken up because one or the other just clammed up communication-wise, clammed up about finances, or clammed up about intimacy and just the touch of another person. Just the hand on the shoulder of a husband who's had a hard day is there's 1,000 words there. You're out in the work day where there's thorns and thistles and you've stumbled and you've lost some business and you've got cash flow problems and you've got an employee problem and you got this and you got that. And you come home and the wife probably, if she's got a heart, she probably sees you get out of the car. And you're only 42 years old, but your shoulders are bent and you're coming up the stairway like that. And she comes to meet you. She puts her hand on your shoulder. She says, honey, I'm so glad you're home. It's always lonely here, even when I get home early from work, if she's a school teacher or something like that, it's always good to have you home. Come and sit down. Let me take off your shoes. You say, come on, Bill, come on. No. Have some heart to see the need and some energy to do what needs to be done. And it goes on here, the wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. You can look your wife, the mother of your children, in the eye and say, I love you, and pull her to yourself in the kitchen or on the stoop in front of the neighbors. My wife doesn't like that. Nothing wrong with her. I'm a free spirit. But when you go to the mall with her, I'm not going to hug and kiss her in the mall. There's nothing. It's only to do with preferences, and a person with the right heart knows what's good and what's not, right? That's not good. I'm not making fun of her. I'm making fun of me. But then it says here, defraud not one the other, unless it be with a mutual consent, I think it says in the New King James Version. Don't just shut yourself off from that intimate, affectionate, really in some ways ultimate expression of love that God designed in such a way that it gives pleasure, excitement, enthusiasm, closeness, pleasantness, and just good vibrations in every way. Because he says, if you do that, you're tempting, you're gonna be a clear shot for the devil to tempt one or the other of you. Don't let that happen. So see, husbands, if you got the heart and the energy, you're going to be concerned about communication, finances, and sex. Wives, if you got the heart and the energy, you're going to be concerned about communications, finances, and sex. That's just the beginning, but it's such a big beginning that if you get those three taken care of, you've got a long way down the road to being a Christian wife or a Christian husband. And then for your casual reading, when you just got a little time, read the 31st chapter of Proverbs, verse 10 and following, about the Christian wife, about the virtuous women. And then read Psalm 128 and read it over and over again. And I see that table's got love all over that table. The tablecloth on that table has got love written on it. And there's nothing hardly as powerful as olive plants seeing mommy and daddy can't keep their hands off of each other. You get my drift? You get my drift? I'll salute my own mother and father. Ray and Evelyn, thank you. Dad was in the nursing home. I told you this before, but it was such a touching thing. I'll probably cry talking about it. He was in the nursing home, mad to be there, and his personality had changed. It wasn't a very pretty sight. He was in the nursing home, and he hated it. We took Mom over to visit him. And she climbed up in bed next to him, in the old hospital bed, and just snuggled up next to him. And she was perfectly comfortable with that, and it quieted Dad down. Because that's the kind of scene I saw a lot of growing up. And you have to say, thank goodness for heart and energy of those that were examples to us before. Well, I've gone over, but I love this subject. And I'm not going to apologize. It took energy to preach it, but it was in my heart to do so. And God help us to assess again the principles, the purposes, and the commandments, and follow that great commandment. This is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and they're not burdensome, it says in the New King James, not grievous, because it's our heart to do it. Let's all stand together.